Tonight, after the panic in Hawaii, the federal government criticizes the state for the false alarm about a ballistic missile attack, as many ask why it took so long to cancel that alert. Three suspects under arrest tonight in what police call a love triangle murder-for-hire plot, and the wrong woman was killed. The runway cliffhanger, remarkable scenes as a jetliner goes over the edge, almost plunging into the sea. How the car is quickly becoming a command center. We'll take a look into the future of driverless cars and beyond. And the Queen opens up about the rocky ride to her coronation so many years ago and just what it's like to wear the crown.
This is NBC Nightly News with Kate Snow.
Good evening. It's been the talk of the weekend. If only for a moment, residents of Hawaii were put into a panic by accident. On Saturday morning, an emergency alert was mistakenly pushed to cell phones and TV sets across the state. It told people a ballistic missile was inbound and they should take shelter. The government now trying to figure out exactly what went wrong. Our Jacob Soboroff happened to be inside the command center at the Hawaii Emergency Management Agency just hours before the false alert was issued. He has our report tonight from Honolulu.
It was pandemonium in paradise after that alert was sent to phones throughout the state and broadcast on television.
A missile may impact on land or sea within minutes.
Shocked tourists and locals, worried they were minutes away from nuclear annihilation.
The hotel staff came and told my parents, seek shelter, you only have 12 minutes.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to stay calm when you don't know what's happening.
Families huddled in their closet during and after the alert went out, staying closely glued to their cell phones.
People are hiding the H3 tunnel. People are running to the mountains with their families.
Today, members of Congress are demanding answers on why it took 38 minutes for a correction to be texted out. Twice the time it would take for a missile to reach Hawaii from North Korea.
Those responsible for this happening need to be held accountable and making sure that this cannot happen again.
The FCC chairman called the false alert absolutely unacceptable and has launched an investigation. Yesterday, Governor David Ige took responsibility.
Today is a day that most of us will never forget. And many in our community was deeply affected by this. And I'm sorry.
The mistake was part of an early warning system put into place amid rising tensions between President Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Less than 24 hours before the false alarm, we were given an exclusive tour of the room where it was triggered because of what state officials say was the push of a wrong button.
This is where the call comes in that notifies us of a ballistic missile launch.
If a nuclear missile is launched from North Korea, that's where you're going to find out?
That's right. These are state warning officers. They'll receive a call from the Pacific Command on a secure line and make a decision to activate the statewide siren system.
Where's the phone?
It's right here behind us.
Saturday morning, that phone never rang, and there never was a signal from the military to sound the alarm. But it happened anyway. And now this state and the nation are dealing with the consequences.
So, Jacob, you were there. You were on the ground. Describe for us what it was like yesterday.
Kate, it was absolutely extraordinary to be not just here in Honolulu, but inside Diamond Head Crater, where that emergency management center is located. They were very clear with us that in the event of an incoming ballistic missile, we would hear sirens, 394 of them throughout the state of Hawaii. Those sirens never sounded. It led to a great deal of confusion out here. And of course, that begs the question, what happens with the general public? Do they maintain faith in this system, especially if next time when those sirens sound, it won't be a drill? Kate?
Jacob Soboroff down in Honolulu. Jacob, thank you. This false alarm came, of course, with the world on edge about North Korea and its nuclear ambitions. Bill Neely is in Seoul, South Korea for us tonight. Bill, has North Korea said anything about yesterday's scare in Hawaii, given that its threats and missile tests have put Hawaii on alert, complete with that Cold War-style early warning system?
Not a word, Kate, and that is surprising because when the Hawaii system was set up last month, the North used it as an opportunity to taunt the United States, saying, look at what our new missiles have done. We've scared you Americans. This time, not a word. They've made no political capital out of this. Now, why? Well, it is interesting that for the last 2 weeks on North Korean state TV, there's been almost no anti-Americanism, no anti-Trump hatred, and there usually is. North Korea is now showing its friendly face to the world. It's going to take part in next month's Winter Olympics here in South Korea. It's now talking to the old enemy, the South, for the first time in 2 years, so perhaps it's chosen not to taunt the United States. And in fact, in just over an hour, there'll be a second round of those talks. The delegates have just begun arriving at the border. They'll discuss a joint orchestra at the opening ceremony and also the possibility of a joint women's ice hockey team. Now, one thing, Kate, that we don't know how North Korea reacted during the 38 minutes when it was suspected of launching that missile. There is no sign it got on the hotline to say, look, we didn't launch anything, and no sign that it made any preparations for a possible American retaliation. Kate?
Bill Neely in Seoul, thank you. For its part, the White House has had little to say about the Hawaii incident. Kelly O'Donnell is in Florida tonight with more on that as the president begins a very busy week, Kelly.
Kate, in fact, today, nothing at all from the White House about the Hawaii missile alert, and no answer when I asked if the president had spoken to the governor or other officials about the issue. But President Trump did express doubts about a critical negotiation to keep the government open. A long weekend in Florida, with the clock ticking toward a government shutdown Friday at midnight. The president, who predicted bipartisan success Tuesday on immigration.
When this group comes back, hopefully with an agreement, this group and others from the Senate, from the House, comes back with an agreement, I'm signing it.
Popped the balloon on helping dreamers today on Twitter. DACA is probably dead because the Democrats don't really want it. But wait.
I do not believe DACA is dead.
The president's Secretary of Homeland Security sounded less sour on chances for a high-stakes agreement that would protect certain young immigrants under DACA, but also increase funding for border protection and the military.
It's not a DACA deal. It's a security immigration deal.
The already complex politics of immigration strained by the potency of racism. After the president was accused of repeatedly using a crass slur discussing countries in Africa during a private meeting with lawmakers Thursday, today more repercussions.
Do you think President Trump is a racist?
I think he is a racist.
Republican Senator Rand Paul disagreed with that conclusion and said the turmoil itself is an obstacle.
You can't have an immigration compromise if everybody's out there calling the president a racist.
New today, two Republican senators in the Thursday meeting with President Trump tried to discredit what other senators of both parties said about the president using a vulgar term.
I'm telling you he did not use that word, George, and I'm telling you it's a gross misrepresentation. How many times do you want me to say that?
I did not hear derogatory comments about individuals or persons, no.
And the fight over what was said continued as the Senate's top Democrat, Chuck Schumer, felt compelled to defend Senator Durbin, who was the first to go public, describing what he heard the president say. Now, all of that tension is the backdrop for the few remaining days to try to reach a budget solution and whether or not it'll have to do with immigration as well. The president is scheduled to go back to Washington tomorrow. Kate?
Kelly O'Donnell, thank you. Just 2 days ago, President Trump decided once more not to kill the landmark nuclear agreement with Iran. That country's president weighed in today. President Hassan Rouhani said the Trump administration had failed to undermine the deal, calling it a long-lasting victory for Iran. President Trump demanded that European powers that are also party to the deal fix what he called its terrible flaws, or the U.S. would pull out. Off the coast of China today, a burning Iranian oil tanker blew up and sank 8 days after colliding with a Chinese freighter. 30 Iranians and two Bangladeshis were aboard the ship. Iranian officials said there was no hope of finding them. The cause of the collision remains unclear. Back in this country, some scary moments today aboard a casino boat in Florida. It happened near Port Richey in the Gulf of Mexico. All 50 passengers were able to make it to shore, where some were being treated for injuries. The cause of that fire is being investigated. In California, a community is in mourning tonight after those deadly mudslides swept through parts of Santa Barbara County. As the search goes on for those still missing, and the area braces for the possibility of even more rain this week. Steve Patterson has more from Montecito.
Inside the evacuation zone this morning, a service of remembrance. This community ripped apart by rivers of mud and stone. 20 people now confirmed dead. 25-year-old Morgan Corey's name added to the toll overnight, joining her 12-year-old sister Sawyer amongst those killed in this disaster. 6 days after the disaster, crews continue to search for survivors. In the rubble, a glimmer of hope, a rescue dog alerts workers to a mudlogged car. Crews dig by hand, by shovel, by machine, discovering just a few scattered mementos, tough for rescue crews searching through their own neighbors' properties.
We're still hoping for that miracle. You know, we're getting close. We're getting close to that time where it's probably going to turn into strictly a recovery mode, but you just never know.
Captain Dave Zanaboni says he could use some good news. This week he found the body of a small child.
I wrapped that little guy like he was my own and stayed with him.
The boy, later identified as part of the Sutadepa family. We met them taking shelter last month during the massive Thomas Fire, the precursor to this deadly disaster. The boy's father, also among the dead, his sister still missing. Meanwhile, residents forced out of evacuation zones are finally being allowed to pick up vital supplies. It may be months before they can move back in.
We're very thankful that at least we have the opportunity to go back to a nice house again.
This community finding a moment to pray for healing in the face of so much loss.
Now a brand new threat. Crews racing to clear debris from these flood basins and channels before more wet weather is expected by the end of this week. If they don't, that may mean a second wave of mudslides. It's another race against time. Kate.
Steve Patterson out in California. In Florida tonight, three people are under arrest in what the police say was a murder-for-hire killing and a case of mistaken identity. It happened in a suburb of Orlando, and authorities say it involved a love triangle. Maya Rodriguez has the details.
Investigators say you murdered her and robbed her and kidnapped her.
Words uttered by Alexis Ramos Rivera, one of three suspects in a murder-for-hire plot gone wrong.
I've seen a lot of really bizarre, heinous crimes, and this ranks right up there with the top.
A week ago, investigators say Ishnar Marie Lopez hired Rivera and his girlfriend, Gloria Ann Marie Quinones Montes, to kill a woman she considered a romantic rival. The suspects tracked down the intended victim to this Ross store near Kissimmee, Florida last Sunday. But they followed and grabbed the wrong woman, 42-year-old Janice Zegondita Torres.
She did not know these people. She was not involved with these people.
When they realize their mistake, police say they killed Torres anyway, beating her unconscious, bounding her with zip ties, and suffocating her with garbage bags. Police found Torres's body more than 80 miles away. They arrested Lopez when she tried to use the victim's ATM card. She then implicated the other two suspects, all three later confessing to the crime.
That this woman lost her life for no reason. This mother, this wife, this daughter, for no reason at all.
Her family now left behind to grapple with a senseless loss. Maya Rodriguez, NBC News.
Well, everybody is okay, which is remarkable when you see what happened in Santa Ana, California early this morning. A car, that's right, wound up wedged into the second floor of an office building after the driver lost control, hit a divider, and went airborne. Two people were in that car. One was able to climb out. The other was trapped for more than an hour and had to be rescued by emergency workers. Both suffered only minor injuries. Unbelievable. In Turkey tonight, investigators are trying to figure out why a jet skidded off the runway, went off a cliff, and almost plunged into the water there. Lucy Kavanoff has more on the terrifying close call.
It was a harrowing, heart-racing ordeal. A Boeing 737 dangling off a cliff in northern Turkey. The jetliner's wheels stuck in the mud, its nose just feet from the sea. A baby wails as terrified passengers scramble off the plane, the flight attendant pleading with them to slow down. Outside, emergency crews secured the plane with ropes as firefighters used water hoses to cool the jet, its starboard engine breaking off and tumbling into the sea. Dazed and muddy after their frightening landing, all 168 people on board survived. The Pegasus Airlines flight took off from the capital in Ankara just after 10 last night, arriving in Trabzon on Turkey's Black Sea coast around 11:30 p.m. There was light rain and mist as the plane touched down when it skidded off the runway, nosediving down the steep cliff. Pegasus Airlines apologized for what it called a runway excursion incident. A Trabzon airport spokesman told NBC News that the plane overshot the runway, saying the incident wasn't due to a technical fault, but rather a pilot misjudgment. But authorities are still investigating exactly what went wrong. Lucy Kafanov, NBC News.
Still ahead tonight, the things your car will soon be able to do. It's the road ahead, and it is coming soon. Also, a success story in Africa, where a tech boom is creating jobs, and an American woman is helping prepare young people for them. We're back with a look at what the future will look like out on the road. Not only cars without drivers, but all kinds of ways your car will soon be able to communicate with you. Our business correspondent Jolene Kent took a look at some of them in Las Vegas.
You got it.
Wow.
It's the pizza delivery of the future.
You can safely remove your order now.
At CES, the biggest consumer tech show ever, Domino's arrives in a self-driving car without the pizza guy. Possible because of Ford's new autonomous car technology, trying to make life easier and cities safer. With new sensors, cars can detect pedestrians, bikers, even light posts and parking spots that then talk to each other.
The parking place is telling the vehicles that it's open, and there's no meter made because the space is through technology billing your credit card.
Samsung wants to make your car central command for your life.
Now you're sitting in Samsung's digital cockpit. Start coming home mode.
The new connected car concept uses emerging 5G technology to help your vehicle tell your house you're coming home.
Why shouldn't my car know that when I'm 30 minutes away, I'd like you to turn on my climate control system and get it to the temperature that I would like?
And if you're not sure you need to swing by the grocery store?
So we'll tap this, and I'm getting a live shot of what's exactly in my refrigerator.
The need for speed is now artificially intelligent, too. The all-electric Byton Concept SUV replaces the dash with a 49-inch flat screen that can stream content and open your calendar.
It will learn your preferences and habits, leading to an exceptional personalized experience.
There are no side view mirrors, instead tiny cameras. And it doesn't even need door handles. They unlock with facial recognition. The price, $45,000, coming to the U.S. in 2020. Changes large and small that you'll soon see on the open road. Jolene Kent, NBC News, Las Vegas.
Wow. Still to come, what Queen Elizabeth has to say about dealing with all those crown jewels. Amid the uproar over those disparaging comments President Trump is accused of making about African nations, we want to go to Africa tonight, to Kenya, for a real success story. It's about that country's emerging tech industry and an American woman who's doing her part to help develop it. Stephanie Rule has more.
Maryland native Audrey Chang found opportunity in an unusual place. So
I wanted to be part of the solution, right? And so that's when I started getting more into entrepreneurship.
Our stats and stuff, so you can put that here.
The 24-year-old was working for a venture capital firm when she realized the Silicon Savannah in Kenya was the perfect place to plant her entrepreneurial dream. She founded the Moringa School in Nairobi in 2014. The economy in this corner of Africa has been energized by a tech boom and suffers with a high unemployment rate. 20% of people under the age of 25 are looking for work.
A huge bottleneck for entrepreneurs and innovators in Africa is really talent, right? Like, they can't find the right talent for all their roles that they're trying to fill.
Her school aims to educate the next generation of developers. Students learn how to code, build mobile apps and websites.
Education really needs to match what employers are looking for. And also, classrooms need to simulate the real working environment.
The Moringa School trains millennials for jobs in the hottest segment of the local economy. The school says they have a 95% job placement rate with students often starting as junior software engineers. They've graduated over 500 students, with some traveling from other African countries to participate in the program.
Eventually, I would want to branch out to entrepreneurship, where I would use my skills as a web developer to build a company that helps the community.
Now Chang is shifting her focus to recruiting more women, launching a girls-only boot camp.
A lot of women don't consider tech as a career option in Kenya. So as Moringa School, we're really trying to bring, you know, grow awareness, expose them to the tech industry early enough.
Contributing to the tech industry in Africa that continues to grow. Stephanie Rule, NBC News.
When we come back, the burdens of being the queen. Elizabeth talks about wearing the weight of the office. This summer will mark 65 years since Queen Elizabeth was crowned, and tonight, the famously private queen is speaking out about her 1953 coronation in a conversation with the BBC.
She's 91 years old, but the Queen of England still remembers the details of that day in 1953. The carriage ride, a beautiful image, but in reality, bumpy.
Horrible. It's not meant for traveling in at all. I mean, it's just not, it's only sprung on leather.
So it rocks around a lot.
It's not very comfortable.
The Queen, who was just 27 years old during the ceremony, opened up about the downsides of the heavy crown.
You know, it would have been up to about there. When my father wore it.
I mean, it was huge then.
Yes, very unwieldy. Fortunately, my father and I have about the same sort of shaped head. Mm. But once you put it on, it stays. I mean, it just remains itself.
Yeah. You have to keep your head very still.
Yes, and you can't look down to read the speech. You have to take the speech up. Because if you did, your neck would break, it would fall off. So there are some disadvantages to crowns, but otherwise, they're quite important things.
Queen Elizabeth herself experiencing a resurgence of popularity after the acclaimed Netflix series The Crown, a period drama depicting her early days as monarch.
I think there's such a fascination with this monarchy because we are at a stage now where we have so many generations, which is unprecedented. We have the Queen marking her coronation, the anniversary, William and Kate having another baby, Meghan Markle and Prince Harry getting married, all in a year.
It's quite a year. You can catch the full documentary about the Queen's coronation. That's tonight at 8 on the Smithsonian Channel. That is NBC Nightly News for a Sunday night. Lester Holt will be back here tomorrow. I'm Kate Snow. For all of us at NBC News, have a great night.